Hi, I'm Ariana Maddox. Whether I'm on TV or Broadway, I live by two rules. Follow your dreams and always wear great shoes. That's why I love DSW. Must-have shoes that pair well with whatever you've dreamed up for your life. Seriously, DSW has all the shoes you need for everything, from errand days to date nights. And they're from top brands at prices you can totally brag to all your friends about. That's why I've partnered with DSW to create a collection of shoes I know you'll love. Because, let's be real, whether I'm dancing on TV, teaching you how to make the perfect cocktail in my best-selling book, or starting a whole new venture, it's all about the shoes. Find the shoes to do all the amazing things you do in my new collection at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hot off the press from Maybelline, New York, it's new Lifter Plump, an intense plumping lip gloss formulated with chili pepper to deliver a heated sensation for an instant plumping effect that lasts. From 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Red Flag, Hot Honey, Cocoa Zing, and more. An extra large wand applicator transforms lips in one swipe. Learn more at Maybelline.com. For a limited time, get 10% off your Lifter Plump purchase on Amazon with code 10PLUMP.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome to True Crime Sucks, a podcast about the best and worst of true crime TV and documentaries. With your host, Adam Todd Brown.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to True Crime Sucks, a podcast about the best and worst of true crime TV and documentaries. I am your host, Adam Todd Brown. Joining me as co-host this week, Kim Kroll is here.
Hi. Hi, everybody. Hi, Adam.
How's it going?
Good. Good. I'm excited for this. I have a little bit of a cold and no eyelashes on, and I'm self-conscious about it.
Self-conscious. Yeah, I, in solidarity, also did not wear my eyelashes.
And I really appreciate that. It makes me feel less naked.
Yeah, I mean, it's the least I can do. So this week, we are talking about a doozy of a documentary. This is the first time we've delved into something this long. 6 episodes long.
It's kind of long, yeah.
It's a little long. It could have been maybe 4, maybe 3 or 4. I think.
Yeah, because there was a lot of stuff that was like really dramatic. That was like, yeah, we get it. That guy's a nutcase. We don't need to keep circling back to. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that was too long. I agree with that.
We're covering the curious case of Natalia Grace.
Yeah.
It's a fun documentary name to say.
It is.
It rhymes. That's fun. There's some alliteration in it. Beyond that, it's kind of horrifying.
Oh, it's awful.
It is weirdly reminiscent of the horror movie Orphan.
And when you text me that, I was like, wait, just wait. Because like, that's what we thought. And everyone I talked to, like, I hadn't seen this in like 4 separate people in 4 different places of my life recently were like, have you seen The Curious Case of Natalia Grace? It is fun to say. And they said exactly this. They're like, well, if you watch it, make sure you have enough time to watch the whole thing and it will haunt you. I was like, I guess I need to watch this. And then I did. And
yeah,
boy, they were right.
It's a complicated story. It involves a family, the Barnetts. They seem like they were pretty well off at one point. They got a really smart kid named Jake, who seems like he's on the spectrum a little bit.
I think he is. I think at the beginning, didn't they diagnose him with autism?
I think Asperger's.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he honestly, like, is one of the saddest, not the saddest part of the story, but one of, like, he was a really sad part of the story.
He's a sad part of the story, but he's also, like, the good guy in this.
Yeah.
Kind of. Like, Jake's a good kid.
Yeah.
He's super smart. He does math for fun.
I think didn't he get his master's or some shit when he was, like, 16? Yeah.
And he's young as shit still.
Yeah.
But there's footage of him giving a TED talk, like, in his early teens at one point, and it's about, like, quantum mechanics.
Like, things I'll never... I could read for 100 years and be like, still don't really get it. And
he's
15 or less.
Yeah, and we don't have to. Like, that's for people like Jake to get.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to take that job from him. I bet Jake would be a terrible podcast host. You know? We all stay in our own lanes.
We all play our part. Yeah.
Exactly. Christine, the mom... It's hard to get a read on her by the end of this because she's not in it.
Yeah.
And so she gets painted one way, like one very specific way throughout the entirety of this. And then right at the end, there's a little bit of doubt as to whether she is quite as much of the problem as it seems.
I think they're both. I don't think she's totally innocent and he's for sure not innocent. Like, I think...
There aren't a ton of good guys in this. There aren't a lot of likable characters. Well,
actually, there's just two really unlikable people. Everyone else seems to be just doing the best they can in a really fucked up situation.
Yeah, everyone else seems to be rightly horrified and confused by what's going on here. And it seems, well, it doesn't seem like what's going on. What's going on is at one point in this family's history, they start like a charity for neglected children and they decide to adopt a child. And in true Hollywood movie fashion, they at first were going to adopt a sweet little girl from Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
But then that earthquake that happened in Haiti kind of ruined those plans and that all fell through.
Mm-hmm.
So then out of nowhere, they get a phone call from this sketchy adoption service in Florida, I believe. Yeah,
I think it's Florida because I remember going, fucking Florida. Florida.
And they're like, hey, we heard you're looking for a kid. We got a kid for you. Her name's Natalia, and you got to come get her right now if you want her. And they're like, sure. And they show up and they see Natalia for the first time. She is a cute as a button child who sort of has the face of a 37-year-old. And it's confusing. At first, because, well, here's the thing. I'm talking about the documentary as it unfolds, having seen the whole thing.
But when I watched it, as it unfolded, I never was on team. This is not a child.
Not even at the point where the woman who set up a play date, because her daughter had the same condition as Natalia and was the same age. And they show up and that woman was like, whoa, that is not a 6-year-old.
I mean, yeah, that a little bit. But like the earliest a little girl has like started to develop and have the hormones is 6, is a child. Like there's like getting a period, like all that stuff. So I don't know. And with that, with dwarfism, a lot of times children have kind of the adult face, have an adult-ish face. You know what I mean? Like if you look up other, so kind of, but
yeah, it was that mom that kind of put the doubt in my head first. Like
Christine?
No, not Christine. The mom who brought her kid to meet.
Oh, right. The one who had the,
because I mean, she had more insight into the condition Natalia had than anyone other than Natalia and her own child. So I found that kind of convincing
at
first.
I mean, it was definitely like a whoa, but it was still like, I don't know, man.
And they're also, I mean, you have to admit, in the first few episodes, they are painting Natalia as, oh, she's probably an adult and probably a very dangerous adult.
Yes. But didn't you ask yourself why? Like, the only reason an adult would go into a situation like this is to continue to be supported and paid for. So why would she then turn around and do a bunch of really scary, sketchy, sociopathic stuff when she's really trying to con these people into taking care of her as a 6-year-old. So that was kind of like, what would be the end game? Like,
Because sometimes people can't control that kind of stuff.
I guess that's true. Or maybe that's how, and sometimes maybe that's how she goes in and murders families, but then there would be a trail of that, right? There'd be I mean,
I don't think she's murdered any families, but they do talk a bunch about her, like, standing.
Oh, no, I don't think she has either. I just mean, like, maybe that's her, like, you know, serial killers, like Gacy liked, you know, little boys and he'd lure them in with his clown stuff. So, like, maybe she's that. But that, I mean, that's the only, I was like, what would be her end game to come in here and threaten, like, if she's a con woman? You know what I mean? Like, that was sort of my whole.
Yeah. But so what happens is, one night they're giving Natalia a bath. She is, to the best of their knowledge, she is 6 years old. They got a birth certificate from Ukraine, which is where Natalia's from. And one night mom is giving her a bath and discovers that Natalia has full pubes. Like, I mean, they don't describe it, but the way they react, like, it had to be pretty substantial.
That right there kind of made me go, what? Like, that made me start to sort of question it. But then I also am like, a simple Google would tell you that that's not as uncommon. So if you saw that in your adopted kid, we have like a whole thing on our phones that tells us the knowledge of the, you know what I mean? Like,
and the other problem in terms of why I didn't immediately reject the idea that Natalia was an adult is there's all those people from that hospital, all those nurses and staff from that hospital who are like, she was a fucking adult. Like, they put her in the adult wing immediately. And I was like, I'm not a nurse. Like, I wasn't in that hospital. Like, I found that kind of stuff pretty compelling at first.
And then that I want to know more about, because you're right. Like, why did that happen? You know, and then also she was hitting on the males that are older in a very adult way. But that also can, it's hard not to give away stuff while we're talking about this, right?
But in that same moment in the documentary where they talk about her pubic hair, she also has her period at the age of 6. And they're like, this is impossible, which probably not impossible, right?
It's definitely not impossible. I Googled it. It's not uncommon, but it's not, you know, it's not like.
Yeah, it doesn't happen all the time, but I'm sure it can.
It has. Yeah. So it's not, that's not the only thing where I'm looking at that. Like, but what was confusing is they send her to this ward or this hospital, and the ward is like, yeah, she's a sociopath, but we can't do anything for you. So here is the psychopath. I don't remember what they diagnosed her as. Or am I jumping ahead?
Yeah.
Sociopath. Am I jumping ahead? Is that not?
Michael says that he's told by a doctor that they have to like keep her locked up in the house and like all this really extreme stuff. And this is the part where, like, before she even ends up in the hospital, this is the part where she has the meeting with the 6-year-old kid who has the same condition as her. Mm-hmm. And that part, again, I found really interesting. And then they also, like, Natalia's 6. She is like a few months removed from being in Ukraine. And somehow no one at first questions the fact that she has no sort of accent at all.
Very American accent. That was odd.
Super American accent. And when they ask her about Ukraine, she's just like, I don't know. And they bring someone in to talk to her in her native Ukrainian language. And Natalia's like, I'm not going to talk. Like, she just refuses to talk.
But that could, like, that, like, going back to, like, if it was an adult conning, wouldn't she come up with a better story, like a language that she did understand? You know what I mean? It's just like all of this stuff is that of a child who probably experienced severe trauma up until this point anyway, right? So, like, it wasn't the accent thing was shocking, but also we don't know how long she'd been in the country. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was going to say London, but from London, and I'm born there, but then we bring me over at 3, I likely won't have like a British accent. You know what I mean? Like, so I still wasn't convinced. And then this is going to sound, not pervy's the wrong word, because you obviously know that's not, But like immediately when they brought up the like, well, she was in the bathtub. Like, what is she developed breasts? Why didn't we bring that up? Right. Because
that it does come up at one point.
Though. But way later when she should be developing breasts. Right. Like,
right.
When she, yeah. Kinda, so yeah. That. So when the pubic hair happened, I was with a group of people and I didn't want to be like, what about her boobs? So I was like, I'll Google this later on my own. But I'm.
Oh, yeah, that's a safer bet. I'll Google yeah, this 6-year-old kid's boobs later.
I mean, I was going to Google her. I was going to Google Natalia Grace's boobs or just tell you on a podcast. I didn't do it because obviously logic was like, I don't think you should Google that.
But. Probably not.
But you know what I mean? Like, that's, I mean, if she had a full thing of pubic hair, wouldn't she have developed breasts at 6?
You would think so.
And they didn't mention that.
That's... They didn't. Not at first. They do mention that she would terrorize her brothers by pissing and shitting on them.
Which is so confusing because weren't they in the car when that was happening?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
And then there's video of them asking her about harassing her brothers. And they ask how she was harassing them. And she goes, farting on them.
Oh, I have so much like love and sadness for this person. Also, you have made me watch documentaries differently. Those two, the two brothers, not the Asperger genius guy, but the two younger brothers.
Yes.
They were never in the documentary. They were never like nothing at all. And I was like, they died. And I was with someone and they were like, what? I was like, most of the time when they're not in the documentary, they died. And my friend was like, or they're minors. Why would you think both of them died? And I was like, right. That.
Yeah. I just assumed they didn't want to be in it.
Yeah. As soon as she said that, I was like, all right. Well, maybe I should stop assuming everyone not in the documentary. I thought Christine was dead too, because she wasn't in it until episode 5.
I was wondering, are we going to find out she like killed herself or something? But now she comes around.
All right.
Also, Natalia would steal her brother's things and throw them in the street to try and get them to go run into traffic, which Natalia is definitely, I don't want to say not blameless, but she does seem like she was a handful.
But also like a few things. One, yeah, you were like, we're going to adopt a disabled child from another country who's probably like, that's going to be a handful. You know what I mean? Like, and two, there are three sides to every story and we've heard one of the sides of the story. You know what I mean? So it's like, how much is this is real? But it did have, it reminded me of the good son, you know, the Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh, is she?
Yeah. Cause she starts, they find that she's hiding knives under her bed. And again, they find her standing over the bed with a knife. And it's really tempting to be like, oh, or what if they're just making that up? But there's also that video where she's reading a Bible and they ask her why she's reading the Bible. And she goes, to get these evil thoughts out of my head. And they're like, what evil thoughts? And she's like, you know, hurting people. And they're like, why do you got to get them out of your head? And she goes, because I'll want to do them. That is intense.
It's intense, but also we later find out some other stuff that you're like, well, I might be hiding knives under my bed as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, so I'm like, yeah, a lot of her behavior tracks for someone who is like stuck in a home like this. So yeah, I'm not trying to say, by the way, in this moment, I was like, I watched half of it and then went home and I was afraid to be alone. Cause
you're afraid Natalia was going to show up.
No, but you know, like a child with a knife standing over your bed is one of the scariest things.
What if she did show up?
I'd be dead.
Probably.
Yeah. If she found me with a knife, why wouldn't that? There's only one reason.
So there's a really important there's a really important moment that happens early on where they take this family outing to like a dairy farm or something.
Yeah.
Fucking Hicks. Yeah. And there's an electric fence. And Michael Barnett is telling the story of what happened. He says everyone's walking. Christine is there. Natalia's there. He and his sons are there. And Natalia needs to like sit down or something because her legs, she has a medical issue with her feet. Yeah. And like it's pretty severe. And she has dwarfism. We mentioned that earlier. So she needs to sit. So Christine decides to stay with her. And the version of events they tell is that Natalia basically tried to drag Christine into this electric fence. And we get a few different versions of that story as this documentary goes on. And it doesn't speak well to Michael's character.
No, and we get a few different stories from Michael.
Right.
Also, a tiny little girl or a little person, right, with dwarfism, say we will call her an adult at this point, who has, if you watch her walk, how in the fuck was she going to be able to get a full-blown adult into an electric fence?
Yeah, there's another woman with dwarfism who actually tried to adopt Natalia at one point also, who they interview in this. And she makes that same point. She's like, we can't hurt you. Like, you are adults.
You're tiny. Yeah.
You could hurl one of us across the fucking room if we tried to do something to you. And yeah, the thought that Natalia could drag Christine into an electric fence is, in retrospect, pretty silly. But the way they present it all in the first episode, in this like horror movie fashion,
yes,
they're like, well, who are they living with? Like, you get caught up in the moment and you're like, oh, I bet she did try to drag her into that fucking fence.
Yeah. And then you're also like, and she didn't succeed. So,
yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, so the all of us are right. She didn't succeed because she is little and she is like,
right.
But Michael at first is like, we didn't hear anything at all. And then another story is like, we were 50, like we were right next. Like,
yeah. Yeah. His story changes dramatically. At first, I think in this version is the one where he says he went like 50 meters up. And then they heard everything and he turned around and saw it. And then there's a later version where he's like, man, I was like a mile into the woods by the time that all happened. We were still running when the police showed up. It's like, that is a dramatically different version of
it. I hope someone hits that guy with their car. Like, I hope.
Yeah, something. He deserves justice of some sort.
Yeah, I like the car thing. But if you can come up with something else.
So the police do show up when this incident happens, apparently. And this is when she gets sent to that state mental hospital for long-term care. And she allegedly tells the doctors about how she's going to murder the entire Barnett family. And this is the hospital that transferred her to the adult wing. And this is the staff they talk to, where a bunch of them are like, she is an adult, obviously. And they talk about her trying to have sexual relations with the other male patients. And it's really weird. But also, it's brought up that like Michael and Christine now have all of these doubts about Natalia's age and her being a threat. And if you're like, okay, there's an adult in my house who's maybe going to kill us, why don't you call the police? Like, they never really reported any of this. They were never like, hey, we think this kid's 40. And she's got a knife.
We have three children. Come help us. Yeah. Instead, they're like, well, I guess we'll take it into our own hands. That's the other thing. Like, it is like, why are there no documents of them? And also, I don't know much about adoption, like the rules. Obviously, I've never tried to adopt a human, but take them back if you're like, I'm sorry, this is not a fit for my family. They're threatening us. Like, what is the legal? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, there has to be some kind of recourse, I would think. I don't know.
Like, or even what, like vice versa, if there's a family that's really abusing a kid and a kid calls them, like, when, like, is there like a 90 day period of like, well, you're not legally their parents anymore. You're not legally the parents, so we can take you back. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think in that situation, if a kid was to call, there's going to be, I mean, ideally there would be some intervention, but given
child care
in this country, maybe not.
Yeah, it's very hard to prove that when you have two parents that are conniving, you know what I mean? That are able to like, yeah. So they never call the police. Also, what was confusing and what the big hole in the story too was this mental hospital says she's a sociopath and they're like, great, help us. And they're like, yeah, we're not going to do that. We'll send it back or we'll send her back to you. That doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. Mental hospitals, that's literally the only thing they're there for, is to take in mental patients and help them, right? Like, no one's gonna send her away.
I was confused by that also. Like, I didn't think hospitals could do that. I didn't think a hospital could be like, this is out of our hands, you're gonna
Good
Maybe you
luck,
can buy something though. On eBay to deal with this. We don't know.
Lock her in a room? We don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of what they tell him. They're like, yeah, you gotta keep her locked in a room. You can't give her free rein in the house. She's going to kill everybody in that house.
This is all from the perspective of Michael.
All from Michael's perspective, which that's important to keep in mind as you get deeper into this very long documentary.
I'm so sorry.
Also important to keep in mind that the police do finally get involved, but it's because the neighbors call the police on the Barnetts, because Christine at one point was trying to get Natalia under control and she couldn't. So in the name of punishing her, she made her sleep on the back porch, and Natalia probably raised quite a ruckus, and several neighbors end up calling the police, and they're like, hey, our neighbor's making their disabled kid sleep on the back porch, which
like,
it seems
what?
Like a turning point. Seems like a weird turning point.
Around that time, you're like, oh, and you don't want to Google anything because you don't want to know. But you're like, I kind of think that these people might not be the good guys here.
But then he says the cops showed up and they immediately realize that this family needs protection from Natalia. And this cop is like, you need to go get her date of birth changed on her birth certificate. And he's like, what? You can do that? And apparently that isn't that uncommon.
For adopted kids from other countries. Yeah.
Right. Like sometimes that information just doesn't transfer over properly and you have to adjust their date of birth. But it's usually
two or
to
three
the
years.
Tune of about a year or two. Like,
and also they said it's not that uncommon too for adoption agencies to shave off a couple of years to make a child more
like
why do I only have, I was gonna say more attractive to other, like what is happening,
hotter, I think.
Sexier for adopted parents. Like people want to adopt a
younger child. Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Oh man, edit that out. I'm just kidding.
Fine.
I know.
This is it's a weird documentary to talk about because we're also like, oh, but what about her pubes? And then, I mean, spoilers, by the end, it seems pretty clear she was actually a child.
She's a fucking child.
She's a child.
And like, if you see her now, when she is 19, she's 19. Like, there's definitely aging that took place, like puberty and aging. Her breasts are developed. Why am I bringing up that? But but I'm just saying,
that's
like,
the thing. That's very uncomfortable.
It's very uncomfortable. And then, like, so she is. So, spoilers, she's a fucking child. And she's there's a woman,
certainly a child, but there are still even people in this documentary, like neighbors, who were like, no, she was an adult. You kidding me? It's weird.
But also, like, I get why they probably still think that, because if someone shows you something, like, is like, I'm this, you're not like, nah. Like, if someone moved in next door that had dwarfism and was like, hi, I'm Jennifer and I'm 30, you'd be like, nah, that's an 8-year-old. Like, you would just be like, okay, right? Like, you wouldn't doubt anybody. And then, like, people coming over and bringing groceries, you're like, well, she is disabled. And like you said, like, probably fucking lonely. So, like, you wouldn't, no normal person would be like, nope. That's a child. You know,
like, ah, come on, give them a little tickle.
Yeah. And then if they live next to you for like a year, it's hard to I feel like the brain can't handle, like, if we knew her and we thought she was 30 and then it came out that the whole time we're having like adult conversations with her, she was like 12.
Well,
it's easier to believe that that kid was lying than it is that adults would go this far. You know what I mean? Like,
Well, another thing that comes up, but just barely, and we're skipping way ahead here, but not really, but
it's long.
One thing that I think would have also sold me on the idea that, hey, maybe she is an adult, is Natalia was hitting on dudes like left and right, like very explicitly. But as it goes on, it's like, well, is that an adult or is that a kid doing what she's seen adults do?
Because that is a very common thing for kids who have been sexually abused to do. Because that is how they know to get love and attention.
And they they don't get into that a lot because I think because they don't have a ton of information about her childhood
and her side of, like, Michael's not going to be like, yeah, I was doing this, you know what I mean? Like, no one is going to admit this in this documentary.
Yeah. Did you ever have that suspicion throughout this?
Michael's
maybe got a little inappropriate, because we haven't really gotten to it, but there's a point in this where, like, a switch flipped for me and I was like, oh, I think Michael might be having sex with this child, but
raping this child.
We're jumping ahead.
We went back real quick. The court changed her age because we jumped ahead, like, how did she get into an apartment? They changed her age to 22.
Yeah, well, we haven't got there yet. First,
oh, sorry,
they call the adoption agency to try and, you know, get the ball rolling on getting her birth certificate updated, and at first the agency won't tell them anything. But then, like, a rogue secretary calls him back and is like, look in her backpack. And in the backpack, they find her birth parents' information. And it's interesting because they send an investigator out to talk to her birth mother. And they don't talk to her in person, but they get her on the phone. And at one point, she says she's been going through this for 17 years. And that does actually line up with Natalia having been born in 2003, because she said that in 2020. So that is early on. You don't realize how damning that is early on, but it's pretty telling that her mom is like, oh, this kid for 17 years has been a bugaboo in my side.
That's also a sad story, but you said bugaboo.
Yeah, she describes it a little differently.
It doesn't translate as eloquently in Ukrainian.
Right. And see, they interview Judith Irving. She also has dwarfism, and she wanted to adopt Natalia at one point.
This is the woman that had dwarfism too at the beginning that we were talking about. That was like, that's a fucking child. Yeah.
And I have it in the notes. The picture they show when Judith is talking about Natalia, she absolutely looks like a child.
She's a baby. Yeah, she's a child.
And she's got baby teeth.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think that speaks to perspective, which is a thing in photos. Like, there's this really famous conspiracy that Paul McCartney died in a car accident in the
60s. In 1966?
Yeah. I don't know if you've heard of it, but
I just perked up so much.
But there's all of these pictures that people use as proof or evidence. And, like, so much of it comes down to, like, perspective and lenses. Like, there's a bunch of, right now, there's conspiracies about, like, Avril Lavigne being a different person or Eminem. And you'll see all these pictures and it's like, that's a camera lens thing.
Well, have you also seen, like, on Instagram, like, now the big trend with Instagram models is what they'll do is they'll take two pictures side by side, and one they'll look like really curvy and thin and hot, and then the other one they'll look kind of frumpy, and they're like, this is literally moments apart from taking it. It is perspective, it's angles, it's all kind of like, this is the same day, same moment. I'm just showing you how fake the internet can be, or like how we can fake things by angles. And for a while, the Billy Shears and the Paul McCartney side by side was my screensaver on my phone. I don't know if you know, I'm kidding
or not. Please make that your screensaver again. Please.
Just really confuse people.
Here's a question. Okay. When Dwayne and Robin Ferris popped up on the screen, were you like, I've seen Robin Ferris somewhere before?
You know, I didn't. She looked familiar, but I wasn't sure. And then when I saw your notes, I was like, oh.
Yeah. She was on an episode of MTV's True Life, which was such a good show.
Oh, it really was.
So much. She was on an episode called I'm a Little Person. And, like, I was like, I know that face. And sure enough. And
How did you? Oh, I guess you just Google her name and then it comes up all the stuff she's done. I was like, how did you even find that information?
Yeah, I literally just Googled Robin Ferris.
I heard it as soon as it came out of my mouth.
And yeah, they got an email from, like, Little Persons of America or something like that. That was like, hey, you want this fucking kid? But the previous family that had her wanted them to pay all of her previous medical expenses also. Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, you're just trying to get rich. but they decide to go pursue it anyway. And they meet with Natalia and some woman named Diane in the middle of the goddamn woods at a murder cabin. This is all before the Barnetts get Natalia. And Dwayne has the God-given gift of discernment.
I really didn't care for them.
Yeah, because Robin Ferris explains that everyone has gifts from God, God-given gifts, and that his is he can tell when people are lying. And I mean, that's just like intuition mostly.
Yeah, I think a lot of us were given that.
Yeah, yeah.
By God, I guess.
I think almost anyone who walked into this situation, I think probably would have been a little sketched out because, I mean, for one thing, he says he could feel evil in the room, but he said he could just tell Diane and Natalia were lying. And that Diane woman is the one we don't know enough about. It seems like if there was any kind of scam afoot, it started with her.
The adult. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But we don't really hear much about her as this goes on. Like, this is just kind of like Natalia's sketchy origin story, sort of.
Yeah. And this is like her, like, take care, like, keep her while they try and push her off on someone.
Yeah. And so he says he could feel evil in the room. And then he closes his eyes and he starts pointing at his temple. And really dramatic music starts playing. And Kim, it is the funniest moment in this documentary. I love it so much. It's so silly. So and silly.
Have you ever done reality TV? That sounds like a...
Not really, no.
They ask you to do stuff like that. Like, I was in a show where I was going to decide if I wanted to date some guy.
Oh.
And I was like, yeah, I'm going to say yeah. And they're like, can you, though, like, make it look like you're really thinking about it? And they're like, just, like, wander in this room and look at various things for a long time like you're thinking about it. And then when it was aired, it was, like, this, like, very somber music of me just looking out the window being like, am I going to say yes to this man? And, like, none of that was real. None of that was real. It was all, like, do you mind just doing that for us for the cameras? And I was, I was 28, so I was like, yes.
I feel like he wasn't coached.
I think I didn't care for him. I was given discernment to not care for him.
Yeah. And also, this is one of those moments where I was like, this could have been cut. Like, this documentary is getting a little long in the tooth already. And we're
those two people were unnecessary. Like, they didn't, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that was like, also real quick, the original neighbor of the Barnetts, the woman that was in a bunch of American flag stuff the whole time.
Uh-huh.
You could tell that they called her and was like, hi, we were wondering, yeah, I'll be there. What time? Like, yes. Anything you need. I would love to do, like, right. Like, the whole time she was like, whatever you want me to say, I'm in.
So excited. So excited.
Yeah.
But also, who doesn't want to be on TV?
I guess that's true. I've been on TV for some embarrassing things. So I suppose. Yeah. All right.
You live in LA. We're all jaded and shit. You live where these people are and Investigation Discovery comes knocking. Of course, you're going to put on your best American flag cardigan and get in front of that camera.
Yeah, you're right. All right.
But also, these two families both swear that Natalia was a child. They're both like, no question. She was absolutely a child. And then we get another version of the electric fence incident. That's where this is actually, I think, the first time we hear Natalia speak, right? Yes. It's the end of episode 2, and they're revisiting the electric fence incident. And this is where we find out that Michael, for one, the interview we've been watching took place in 2019. They cut to a 2020 interview, and he seems like a completely different person. He seems I was going to say completely different in that it seems like he's into meth now. Like, he is hyper times 10. He seems unwell. He looks different. He looks gaunt. And we find out a lot at the end of episode 2. One, that he gave two different versions of this story. One where he says in 2022, he says he had no way to know how the police reacted to the incident at the farm because he and his sons were like a mile into the woods by then. But then in the interview from 2020 or from 2019, he says he got like 50 yards away when he heard screaming and turned around. And I'm wrong. The interview they cut to is 2022, not 2020.
Yeah, it's like a few years. Yeah.
It's like 3 years. Yeah.
Don't they also interview the guy that was at the dairy farm that day and is like, yeah, none of that happened?
Yeah, they interview him in episode 3, but at the end of episode 2, we finally hear Natalia talk. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I think when I got up, I kind of stumbled and fell into Christine, and she like freaked out like I was trying to push her into the fence. And I think she's also like, I can't push her into the fence.
Yeah, how could I have done that? I can barely walk.
And in that moment, it struck me that like we hadn't heard Natalia talk up to that point. And it was kind of a bummer. Like not hearing her talk was kind of a bummer, but having that realization that we're like an hour and a half deep into this story. And this girl who I expected to like we hear her in like little video clips as a kid. Mm-hmm. And she's, you know, like just saying, she'll say like one creepy thing. And it's like, yeah, that kid, she really is a fucking weirdo, huh?
Yeah.
And then you finally hear her talk for real at the end of this episode. And it's like, oh shit, she probably could have been weighing in on this the whole time. And
she's a kid.
Yeah.
Why wasn't she weighing in on this the whole time? Like, that's the other thing. Like, she's yeah, we can keep going.
Yeah.
The story makes me so mad.
And I was like thinking, well, okay, well, we're going to hear from her a whole bunch more going forward. Like, I expected episode 3 to start with them sitting her down for her like talking head interview.
Yeah.
And it does not. It does not. It opens with her making a 911 call to report herself because she is stalking one of her neighbors and thinking of hurting them. And in the notes I hear have, what the fuck is happening here?
Also, is that a dramatization?
I don't think so.
Who took that video then of her calling 911?
No, the video is a dramatization.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Actual audio from.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But also
crazy.
Yeah.
Parents were just filming her making that phone call.
Like, that brought up some questions. Yeah, I was like, I think that was a drama. I can't say that word. That's funny. Yeah, add it to the list, I suppose.
But that did kind of support the notion that she might have been a threat to the Barnett family opening up episode 3. But then they kind of drop that thread and we don't get back to it until later. You sort of touched on earlier the judge that ends up re-aging her.
Yeah.
It is kind of insane how he does it. Because again, it's not uncommon, like we said, for kids who have been adopted from other countries to sometimes have to have their date of birth adjusted a little bit. But his reasoning is something along the lines of, well, if she's got those kind of pubes, she must be 18 when they got her. And she's been here 4 years. So you're 22 now, which that is a dramatic leap from she would have been what? 10?
Yeah, with zero things other than the judge going, a lot of pubes. That's wild. Yeah, like that's...
And there is a doctor of some sort involved, but it's important to remember that the Barnetts have money.
Yep.
And I've said it on a bunch of these episodes, and I will say it again. When it comes to stuff like this, when it comes to the court system, you can hire a doctor who will say pretty much what you want them to say. You can hire a pathologist who will go to bat for your version of events. And in this case, there was apparently a doctor of some sort involved in re-aging her to 22.
But didn't they interviewed the doctor later, like when court came up, and the doctor was like, no, I said her bone plates were opening up, which means that's like a growth thing.
Right.
And the lawyer was like, nah, that's not what we're asking you. Nope. Stop talking. Like, it was like very much like the doctor was like, well, no, there was like a weird fight between the lawyer. Yes. Yeah. So they had a doctor that was like, no, this is a child. But they found, I guess, somebody else that was able to.
So then they go out and get Natalia an apartment. They just drop her in the middle of an apartment community. And they're like, you live here now. And it's like, damn, you thought she was a child like a few years ago. And now she's got her own apartment. And it just, even if she was 22, she is clearly not the kind of 22 that should just be dropped off in their own apartment to fend for themselves. And it seems
so heartbreaking.
Like, that's really what happened. Like, once that judge said, well, she's 22, they're like, fuck yeah, no longer our responsibility. She is an adult. We're going to put her out like fucking trash. I mean, they did, you know, pay for her apartment, I guess. And
they paid for her apartment, but she was on SNAPs, or she had an she was on like EBT, like she was on disability. So they had SNAPs. They were getting disability checks to pay her apartment, because that's what happens in the next when they move to another place. So they were like getting like government funded programs to pay for her stuff. And if you go into that, like, so they, yeah, sure. But he's pulling up in his Lamborghini and shit. I don't know cars. I don't know if it was a little bit like,
but it was, it was a
Lamborghini,
think, something
yeah,
like that.
Ferrari.
Like, one of the
yeah.
Two.
And they, like, you go, like, they show, it's so like the one scene where he's like, oh, I recorded this. And he's like interrogating this child about where she got donuts. And all I'm thinking is, this isn't the argument he thinks it is. Like, he doesn't come off as like, oh, he's really proving a point. It's like a neighbor gave her donuts. It's just, and it's obviously the house. Like, if I was given a house at 20 or at 10 years old, that's what it would look like. And I'm not disabled. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm so mad about this.
And this is the part where I started getting really suspicious of Michael, because they
not all those cracked out interviews. Sorry.
Well, no, it's because the neighbors talk about how much Natalia smelled and how her clothes were like always dirty. And one of the neighbors is like, you know, I got the sense that she maybe couldn't bathe or change clothes without help. And she would only bathe or change her clothes when someone showed up to help her. And that's when they mentioned that Michael would show up a bunch in his fucking Ferrari. And I was like, so Michael's bathing her?
And she's 22, quote. But like, yeah. Yeah.
And now she's an adult in Michael's eyes.
Oh, God.
And also, we completely forgot to mention that it's brought up that when they adopted Natalia, the Barnetts failed to mention that they had like domestic violence incidents in their past. They just like lied about that on the application. And so you got that suspicion working in the back of your head. And now it seems like Michael's the one showing up bathing Natalia
her,
and changing
her
clothes. And it's like, and in this, after they talk about her like possibly exchanging sexual favors for money at the mental hospital.
But you're like, where, like, did she learn that? Where did she, like, learn?
Oh, where is this going? Like,
and that's the thing. You can afford a Ferrari as like a regular person. Say Natalia is 22 and they can afford a Ferrari. So they are rich, right? Obviously, in that incident, you hire a caregiver. You don't, like, that's like the more he talks, the more you're like, you don't sound like the good guy that you think you do, dude. Like, you hire a caregiver that helps her change. You don't go over there as an adult man, her quote adopted father, and bathe her. But they were like, yeah, the neighbors were like, when he was gone, she was clean again.
Yeah, it's very suspicious.
I'm going back to that whole hitting him by a car thing. You're on board again.
And yeah, you mentioned there's all these videos of him like interrogating Natalia because a DCFS worker has been showing up again. Because now she's like, well, she's still a disabled person who fucking needs help. So I'm still going to show up and check on her. And Michael is like, where'd you get those donuts? That DCFS worker show up. And it's intense and weird.
Especially because he's like, I turned on my phone and I recorded the whole thing. And we're watching. We're like, yeah, this isn't the argument you think it is, Michael. Like, you don't look.
He's really proud of it.
He's really proud of yelling at, even if she is 22, you're yelling at a disabled person that you've adopted as your child. Like, you know what? Like,
yeah, her neighbors all swear that she was an adult, though.
Once again, if a little person showed up, like if anyone showed up, and even if they did look younger and they were like, I'm 30, you wouldn't be like, nah, I think that's an, like, you wouldn't question it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There is one person. They only talk to her on the phone. She's like, she works in the leasing office.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, Natalia would show up and sit in front of my desk and eat the free candy on my desk for as long as I would let her. And she would just show up every day. And she was like, that's what a child would do.
That's what a child would do.
If she were to tell me that she really was a child, I would believe you, because that's what kids do. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's a pretty valid point.
Yeah. Also, she was going into the neighbors' houses when they weren't there, like rummaging through their stuff. that's a thing a child would do.
Yeah. Like she, they would like avoid her because she would just like want to come over and hang out like all the time. And yeah, that's a kid who doesn't understand boundaries.
Yeah. Or like you said, a lonely person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also why you don't make friends with your neighbors. Just in
case
I'm friends with my neighbors now and it's worked out, but it's the only time it's ever worked out. They have boundaries though.
Mm, I don't think our politics would click. Maybe my neighbors on this side, but over here,
no. Oh yeah. No.
They seem too Blue Lives Matter for me.
So weird.
So yeah, she also tells them a bunch about how she pulled knives on her adoptive parents. So they're all rightfully sketched out, but also alternating between being sketched out and talking about her titties a bunch.
Yeah, they do talk about her boobs a lot.
That, yeah, this group of neighbors in particular, everyone brings it up. But also, this is also very confusing because they would talk about her hitting on like all these adult males, but also she would hit on like
little boys.
Like boys who would be presumably maybe her actual age, which if she's been abused, both of those things would probably seem normal.
That tracks. And also, this is one thing I don't like about the Midwest that annoys me so much. The weird pride and how they all get to keep their doors unlocked.
Oh, it's how people get murdered.
Yeah. It's so dumb. And I was watching with a friend. I was going on a big soapbox of how stupid it is that people leave their doors unlocked. And she stands up and she walks over and locks her door. I'm like, we're alone in your apartment in the middle of Hollywood.
And yeah, she's like, definitely yeah. Lock your door there.
Yeah, she's like, I guess I don't. But I'm like, so many people don't lock their doors. And which is
Hollywood is not the kind of small town where everybody locks their doors.
And also, I don't know if my neighbors do either, but also if you have a neighbor that is unwell, that is mentioning knives and threatening people and is coming in like unwanted, and you'll come home and she's in your house, don't you think you start locking your doors then? Like, don't you think they're like, we're so shocked every time she's like, start locking your doors.
Yeah. Yeah. Just lock your goddamn doors.
It's just a weird Midwest brag that annoys me and has always annoyed me.
Well, not just that, but we see a thing that I talk about when it comes to the Midwest all the time. Mm-hmm. People who don't live there and aren't that familiar always hear the Midwest and picture like, oh, cornfields and small towns. You'll get fucking shot in Lafayette, Indiana,
yeah,
where they move Natalia to next. Lafayette is no fucking joke. Like it is, there are several towns in the Midwest, mostly due to their proximity to Chicago, that are highly fucking dangerous from a crime standpoint. Gary, Indiana, lots of spots. Where's Notre Dame? It's not in Lafayette. South Bend, Indiana. You can probably buy a house for like $50,000 in South Bend, Jesus. Indiana. You can't send your kid to Notre Dame for that much, but the areas surrounding it, at least when I lived in the Midwest, it was kind of a fucking nightmare. So yeah, like Lafayette, Indiana, where they moved Natalia to, it's definitely not the kind of small town where nobody locks their doors. Like they show clips, they just show the town and you can look at it and tell.
And you're like, lock your doors. Well, also is like, he's like, well, we went to college there. That's how we met. It's like, he's like trying to like say how nice of this area, this Lafayette is, while they're showing the videos. And it's like, well, yeah. And they move her into a second story apartment. Am I jumping ahead?
No. Like what struck me, not only, you're right, they move her into a second story apartment that not only that, but it has steps she has to climb just to get to the steps to get into her apartment. Michael starts listing off all these things that make it a great neighborhood, and they all make it sound like a bad neighborhood. He's like, you know, there's a GED center nearby. There's fucking payphones. It's like, oh yeah, that must all be for the rich people. Like,
yeah, this is definitely...
That's what's really bothersome about this is these people had enough money to do what they did in a more ethical way. Yeah. Like they could have gotten her an apartment and, like you said, paid for a caretaker. It seemed like they were trying to get this girl kidnapped or murdered.
Yeah. Get rid of her somehow. If we put her here, maybe she'll just be. But then the interesting thing is, so the neighbor below her, who scared me a little at first, but by the end of it, I was like, that bitch is badass. Cause she had like 9 kids, bunch of tattoos. And she was like, my heart breaks for her. That was a child. That was a fucking child. But then Natalia disappears and Michael's now concerned cause the checks stop coming. And so it's like, were they trying to get her kidnapped? Cause when she kind of sort of got kidnapped, she didn't get kidnapped, but you know what I mean? Like, they were like, we needed to find out where she went because the money stopped coming. I hate that guy.
And it kind of did seem like they were hoping something bad would happen to her, because they not only drop her in what the woman who lives there herself describes as a high crime neighborhood.
Yes.
And they also take her phone. Like, they don't let her have a phone. She can't call 911.
She falls down the stairs.
Yeah.
And they're also helpless. And also, like, the apartment itself, like, other little people are like little dwarf little people. That's the.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay. Are like, there is absolutely no access for this little girl to cook food, wash her dishes. Like, it's like a bigger person's apartment. And also, she's a child. Like, it's like they went and they took her phone. And when they gave it back, they just, so heartbreaking. They wiped her contacts, right? They wiped everything. She had no one.
They wiped her contacts so she couldn't call anyone and talk about what was happening. They forgot to pay her electric bill. So she lived 3 days or so without electricity. And the reason they finally become alarmed is the GED class she's taking calls and asks if they've heard from her. And by this point, they're like living in Canada.
Yeah, they moved up to Canada with their genius son to do something. I can't remember what, but they...
Yeah, so they not only moved Natalia to a whole other part of Indiana, they moved to a whole other country and just left this probably kid...
100% kid. There is no doubt in my mind this is a child, not a child. Are you just being like the alleged thing that they have to do in like court papers? Not court papers, but like articles?
No, I mean, I'm just like playing along, I guess. Oh, like, sorry. It does seem pretty clear.
I'm not good at that.
But I mean, you do have to sort of see it from their perspective. Like, they just went to court and a doctor and a judge were like, she's 22. So they're like, all right, I guess we don't have legal responsibility, but you still do.
You do.
You have someone in that situation who's living with you and you are their caretaker.
But also, they probably hired that doctor, like you said. You know what I mean? Right. Like, they didn't go to like, yeah, all right, yeah. So GED is like, she stopped showing up.
Right. And that's when they find out she's moved in with Cynthia Manns. And Detective Brandon Davenport, he reaches out to Cynthia. And she tells him about Christine being a crazy person and demanding that Natalia stay at her own home instead of going out with friends or meeting people. And Cynthia seems fine. Like, I was a little suspicious, but also it seems like she had her heart in the right place when she took
Natalia in. It seems like she was going in. Yeah, she was in a GED class with a child and was like, where are your parents?
Yeah.
And then this little girl, you know, who probably didn't smell very good, had a lot of trauma and was just probably trying to explain her situation. And Cynthia, who has a family and a home, was like, why don't you come stay with us? And my favorite part about all this is that they were able to sign over her social security checks because they made Natalia an adult. So it's Natalia had full. Oh, I loved it. They were like, well, now she's getting the money. It's like, well, you made her an adult. So she should be getting the money.
Whoops.
Oh, I loved it. It was like a little justice, a little bit.
And the Barnetts end up getting divorced at one point. And Detective Brandon Davenport, he's a very important figure in this story because I don't recall how I think he was sent out when Natalia like
disappeared,
was like missing
in
Lafayette. And so he is rightly very suspicious of what's going on. And in 2019, he goes to talk to Michael at his home and he's running all these cop techniques on Michael, but you can tell Michael thinks he's really fucking smart. So he doesn't mind talking way too much. And what he's doing is getting Michael to like try and claim Christine did everything. And like, well, what did Christine do next? This is a cop. He knows full well that Michael was married to Christine. He was there. So yeah. Everything he's saying, he's kind of implicating himself in also. And he lets Michael talk, lets him talk. And eventually he goes, you know, I think you abandoned a child and you know it. And he's like, how old do you think she is right now? And Michael goes, oh, I don't know, 20, 22. And that's when they cut to someone else who's like, she would have been 16 when you dropped her off then. That's still a crime.
That's a child. Yeah.
It's still a child. But it's a very dramatic moment. And Michael doesn't take it well. He and Christine end up getting charged with child neglect. And Michael, this is where I really start disliking this dude.
Here? God, I hated him the whole time.
Well, yeah, but you're right. I hated him the whole time. But then there's this part where he says, I'm the definition of the guy who had it all and lost it all. Saying that while he's taking the hard top off his vintage collectible Corvette. But then he's like, it doesn't run. Motherfucker, if you can afford to keep that Corvette, you have not lost it all. And
no.
Let's talk about all that fucking property you live on and that Jeep Cherokee parked under the tree. Like, we're not going to see it. It's like, you still have some shit.
Yeah, no, you're fine.
For you.
Yeah, no one feels bad for you.
And it's like, how did you lose it? Did Natalia steal your money? That never came up. Like, where did your money go?
Yeah, it sounds like you are a bad person. Your bad person wife divorced you and you abandoned a disabled child. Like,
and he's just going so hard in the paint, trying to make Christine seem like the sole aggressor here. Like she was just this big household bully who did everything and he couldn't control her. He couldn't do anything about it. There was nothing that he could do in the face of this evil force. And it's like, man, I feel like you're laying it on a little thick, dude.
Yeah.
And again, we don't hear from Christine at all.
At all. And there, the moment when he's talking about how she's this big abuser, and he's like, yeah, why don't you take the camera and point it to the ground and I'll show you. Like, so are we?
That scene was interesting, though, because it's in the trailer and it's completely out of context in the trailer.
Yeah.
So it actually makes Michael look even crazier than he is, because in the trailer, first you see him like crying and then you just see him punching the floor over and over. And you're like, man, that guy's wigging the fuck out.
That guy's unhinged. Yeah.
And he is. But yes. In the documentary, you see what he's doing is demonstrating how Christine was beating Natalia.
Oh, my God. And if that has any shred of truth to it,
yeah.
What kind of person could just watch that?
Well,
and I understand abuse and I understand men also get abused and there's also victims. I understand that. And I was sort of on that side for a little bit while I was watching. I was like, well, maybe.
But remember, he claimed that he recorded video of this and that when Christine caught him recording video, she like angrily forced him to delete it and like broke the phone, I think. And he was like, I kept that phone just hoping that someday someone would recover something from it that could prove I'm not lying about this. And they did. They have those text messages where she's like, come on, she's an adult and she fucking deserved it. So
oh
like,
God.
It seems like, and also it's, remember, it seems like she also maybe kicked Natalia down the stairs once.
Yeah, that, yeah. When the genius kid was being interviewed about his parents. And then they were asking about Christine's abuse and he got really uncomfortable and said, I don't want to talk about this. I was really proud of his boundaries, by the way. He was like, no.
Yeah, Jake's a good kid.
Yeah.
Also, Michael has a movie theater popcorn popper in his living room. You're not broke. That's not, you can pawn that.
God, I hate him. I hate him so much.
Yeah. And like, I love the scene where he starts like crying over having reunited with Jake. And Jake is just like looking at him like, well, you are not normally like this.
Yeah. Why are we crying right now? Is it because of the cameras or what?
You can tell Jake's like, motherfucker.
Oh, I think he's a victim in this whole thing, too. Like, who knows what? He's in the he lives in his dad's basement now when he got his master's at like those kinds of kids like with Asperger's, if they are like directed in the right way, they have these like wonderful full lives and careers. And this kid's like in the basement and he just looks sad.
Yeah. And yeah, they catch him. He says he doesn't want to talk about this one certain thing, but it turns into a HBO's The Jinx moment where he doesn't real, huh?
I don't know what that is.
It's the true crime documentary about Robert Durst, who's the guy who like killed a bunch of his friends over the course of a bunch of years.
Oh my God, I want to see that. I'm scared though.
He didn't, at one point, he didn't realize that he still had his microphone on and he went to the bathroom and he had like fucked up a question in the interview. And he was like, what did you do? Well, of course I killed her. And he like just admitted all this shit on an open mic and didn't realize it. And that's what Jake does too. Jake is like, I thought we weren't going to talk about mom kicking her down the stairs. And then he's like, oh, my microphone's on. Which also Jake's pretty smart. That he might have just like,
that's what I meant
to say it. But
because yeah, that's what the
best way.
I feel like that's what I thought. I was like, I don't think that was on accident, because immediately he went upstairs and said that and then was like, darn it.
Yeah.
But kicking Natalia down the stairs, God.
He also confesses to having pissed in her bed once because Christine told him to, and he seems very broken up about that. Which, I mean, yeah, I would too. Yeah.
You were a child, your mother told you to do this, you did it reluctantly, and then years later you're like, I don't think that was a kid, and it turns out my parents are big abusers, and I was a part of it.
Yeah.
But I was also a kid.
Christine does seem like a huge problem. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But it's just that Michael does too. And we only hear from Michael. So Christine, and like we hear from Michael's mom, she talks about how much of a monster Christine was. And it's very one-sided.
Yeah. Well, there's also the videos of Christine making Natalia put her head against the wall as a child and stand there with her head on the wall for 8 hours, 12 hours. And Michael's like, yeah, I came home and Christine was like, I rule the house and this is what she's going to do. And, you know, she defecated in her pants at one point because she was standing at the wall for hours.
Yeah.
Like, Michael, I understand abusive homes and I understand that victims are, you know, I understand Stockholm. I understand all that stuff. But like, now that you know it's wrong, he's just like, well, I don't know what else to do. You know, like that guy's a sociopath for sure.
You know what Christine didn't understand? The internet. Because she was taking a whole bunch of sexy pics and sending them off to other dudes. And they were all uploading to Michael's Dropbox account, which they weren't married by that point, right?
I think they were.
They're like flashing.
I think when he found out they weren't married anymore, but when she was doing it, they were married.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And yeah, he's like, he's just really getting after it in terms of the crying. And it all seems so over the top. And there's a lawyer who's interviewed throughout all of this who suggests that maybe the Barnetts tried to have Natalia's age changed to avoid child abuse charges, because the way she was aged up to 22 is brought up. That's where we find out about the doctor. The doctor says Natalia told her she's over 18 when he decided she was 22. But it turns out Christine was telling her to say that. And that's what the judge based his ruling on, was Natalia saying she was 18. So they're like, yeah, well, now the next question is, why did they do that? Was it just because they wanted to get rid of her? Or was it because they knew they were filming themselves abusing this kid? Because they were. All the stuff about her leaning against the wall, that's all on camera. It's all in the documentary.
It's a film. Yeah, that's not reenactments.
But then now, having gotten through all of it, I'm like, was it because Michael was abusing her in the other way also? Yeah. Because it does get touched on just a bit. Like, they go right to the edge of suggesting that's what happened, but they never say it. And I don't know if that's for legal reasons.
Well, very end with the country music guy.
Yeah, we'll get there.
We're not there yet. Okay. Yeah. So they touch on that briefly when they're, okay. And so you're wondering
if maybe that is why
they aged her up, so Michael could be like, she's of the age of consent.
Yeah.
It wasn't sexual abuse.
Also, if they'd had her for like 4 years at that point, that would mean, she was 18 when we got her. So,
and so therefore, it was consensual sex, like, not rape of a child. Yeah.
Yeah. More like the Woody Allen of Lafayette, if you think about it that way, would be
Michael's.
It's not mine.
So,
yeah, her date of birth is very important. They send a team of investigators to administer a DNA test. On camera, Anna says Natalia was born in 2003.
Yeah.
Which would mean she was not 22.
It would mean she was the age then. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they did a DNA test that that woman was Natalia's daughter.
Yeah.
Her mother.
She is Natalia's mother. It also kind of seems like she was coerced into giving her up for adoption.
Yeah, which is really
heartbreaking. They were just like, this kid's going to have such an unhappy life. You don't want to put that burden on yourself. Just give her away. And she's like, I don't know. I'll keep her. And they're like, no, give her up. And so that part's a bummer. Yeah. But this is also the part where I was like, this documentary's a little long. Because they start going into Michael preparing for his trial.
Oh, that was so long.
And like, I didn't give a single shit about it. And
I did, however, love how much those lawyers hated him. They hated him as much as all of us did. Oh, man. And he's the most unaware person, like no self-awareness of like, because like he's like, yeah, we're like family now. And the lawyer's like, sure.
Yeah. He's like forcing them to fist bump him and shit. And he's a professional. Like, he's not going to get on a documentary and be like, oh, my client, I actually hate him and I think he's guilty. Like, no one's ever going to hire that guy again. So he's very professional about it. But it's also very obvious that he fucking hates Michael. I think probably everyone but Jake does, and probably Jake a little bit.
Yeah, Jake probably one day will realize it's okay to hate your dad.
And like all his baseball analogy shit at the beginning of episode 6, he's like talking about getting ready for court. And he's like, I know what they're going to pitch to me and I'm going to knock it out of the park. It's like, you've used that bat to beat a dog to death, probably. Like, you are a psychopath.
You were, because also they're like, he's like, the lawyer's like, just look innocent, smile. And then he gives this like creepy smile, like he's a sociopath.
Yeah, that part where he's like, my role to play when we go to court is, let me find that quote.
Yeah,
my role is just going to be innocent guy sitting still. And then he sits still and shows what that looks like. And he could not look like more of a maniac than he was in that moment. Like, and when you can't sit still and look normal. Oh, man, I know. I'm not a fan of a demeanor conviction,
but
I feel like I would demeanor convict the shit out of Michael.
Well, the lawyer's like, smile a little. And then he smiled this crazy smile. It's like, not like a smile, you know, like a content. And you can tell the lawyer's like, fuck. Like,
yeah.
Do you have to be here for this?
Oh, yeah. It's bad times. And so Christine's Facebook history gets pulled as part of this trial. And Michael finds out she's been having some affairs. Mm-hmm. There was one with a maintenance guy that she just made out with a little. There was like a delivery guy or something who came around a bunch that she struck up an affair with. But the most interesting by far is her affair with Freddie Gill, who is a traveling country musician and a little person himself.
Yep.
Which I was like, damn, Freddie, get it.
Yeah. I mean,
But
she seems terrible. But yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah, she seems awful.
But he also sounded like this isn't the first hot blonde he's been with, paid for or otherwise. He also mentioned that once, that he has dabbled in
prostitution. Like, if you're going to be a straight white dude in 2K23 talking about sex the way Freddie does, you better be Freddie's size also.
Yeah.
Like, he's fucking earned it, I guess. But he's a little gross.
I've never heard of him, and yes.
Oh, I've never heard of him as a musician.
Oh.
Like, I know he's a musician because they say it in...
You're not a big Freddie Gill. You don't have all his albums.
No, not a big Freddie Gill fan. And there's a scene where this woman, Michael's crying like he does, and this woman comes over and hugs him. And I have in the notes, who was that? Oh, okay, they're going to tell us. And I still don't really know, because I was just like, I don't fucking care. I like to check my phone when that was happening.
I think that was his girlfriend.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I gather.
But it's weird that they never talked. They didn't talk to her at all.
Not really. They talked to her very briefly in that moment. Like,
yeah,
when everyone was probably like, who's that? Who's hugging this fucking maniac here?
Yeah.
Again, Michael's lawyers clearly hate him. They have a meeting. This was arguably the most infuriating thing that happened in this documentary. They're having a meeting about Michael's trial, which starts the next day. and there are a plethora of delicious looking donuts on the table. And at first I was like, no one's touching those donuts and they look very good. Someone needs to eat a donut. And as soon as I had that thought, one of the people on Michael's legal team starts eating a donut and the lead lawyer is like, put that donut down. We're on television. We're doing a thing here. Put that down.
Get it together. So I forgot about that. Get it together.
Why do you have donuts there then?
Yeah. Oh. Were you waiting until they said cut and then all of you were like, let's, he's like, we're doing a thing here.
Food, like eating competition style, stuffing them down, dunking them in water. Like Joey Chestnut. Yeah, I want to see that outtake.
I would like to see that as well.
Benny Hill music playing.
We're doing a thing here. Get it together. The guy's like, all right, sorry.
Were you caught off guard at all by the number of crosses in that neighbor of Natalia's house?
No.
There's a scene, it's really quick, where they...
Yes. It looks like, have you ever seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer? I've asked you this 7,000 times.
I have not, but it definitely looks like some horror movie shit.
So there's an episode where a guy is trying to kill a vampire and he's been planning to kill his vampire for a really long time. It's Spike, but you don't know who I'm talking about. And Spike walks into this room and it's comically wallpapered with, like, I mean, it's not for the show, but it's like every inch of the wall is covered in crucifixes. I was like, hey, it's like the principal who's trying to kill Spike, but for a TV show about vampires. I forgot about that.
Yeah, it looked like she collected creepy crosses. It was, which she clearly does.
Yeah.
And so the trial starts. Things go awry immediately when on the stand, Michael says they picked Lafayette to drop Natalia off in because, quote, it's a white trash town. And that doesn't sit well with the residents of that
town. Lafayette. Yeah. The peers of Lafayette. Right. Yeah.
Including the 12 who are on the jury.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it really is crazy, though. At one point, I think even before the trial happened, there was this ruling that when it went to trial, they were not allowed to say, to talk about Natalia's age. Like the only thing they were able to say was that she's 23 years old. Like,
and you said it was because the statute of limitations ran out. I read your notes and I don't remember that part.
Where did I say that?
Oh, maybe you didn't say that and I read it somewhere else. Because I was trying to read why they made that decision. And I think they said an article said it had something to do with the statute of limitation had ran out with that abuse. So it didn't matter. I read a lot of art. I went down a bunch of rabbit holes after this whole thing. So I'm not quoting it correctly. So
yeah, I'm not sure, but it was a wild decision because
that was what the whole thing was about.
Yeah, it was. I mean, at first it was child neglect that they were facing. And another thing that's crazy is how long this fucking documentary is.
I know, I'm so sorry. I mean,
it's not your fault, but I hate that this is why documentaries don't need to be this many episodes. There is a scene in this that made me so mad. It's not that long, but it's a few minutes. Mm-hmm. And it's just them sitting around eating pizza and drinking beer, waiting for the verdict to come back in. And they make it see, they draw this scene out, and I get it. Like, you're trying to
be dramatic,
drive home like what this, how long this wait was. But one, we're all humans. We know what a long wait is like. Like, I get it. You're clearly filling out this documentary. And then to top it all off, when they get the call that the verdict has come back in, they've been waiting 2 hours. You could have just hit the courtroom cafeteria for a 2-hour wait. They made it seem like they were waiting all day.
Yeah.
And this jury came back in 2 fucking hours.
I hated that.
And at first it seems like the verdict didn't go well.
Okay. Yeah. Let me ask you that. Cause the person I was watching with, I was like, wait, and she had seen it before. And I was like, what's the documentary? And she goes, well, listen to the music. And I was like, I can't tell. Were you? And I don't know if, you know, when you see something and then later you see it again, then you're like, oh, okay, well, this is obvious. So I couldn't tell. But I was like, yeah, I can't tell if they're sad or happy. I can't.
Well, to me, what threw me off was less the way Michael and his girlfriend were crying so much as the look on his mom's face. Yeah. Like his mom, the look on her face, you would think he had just been sentenced to 75 years in prison.
Maybe his mom was bummed out, was like, my son is guilty and this should not have gone this way.
Yeah, mom was like, he was definitely assaulting that kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, her look, like she had such a look of shock on her face. And then we find out he was found not guilty on all of the major charges.
And they interviewed one of the jurors that was like, yeah, they found out later about the age stuff. And they're like, yeah, it would have been a very different trial had we known this age was altered.
Well, not just that, but the instructions they were given by the judge. She was like, we all wanted to convict him, but under the strict letter of the law that we were working under, he had to be found not guilty. Oof.
I hope he gets hit by a truck, like a Big Mac truck. Not the judge, Michael.
The producers reached out to Christine for comment, and she, I'm assuming, responded in writing because the only response they got was, your network is whack, which I can't stress enough, people. When you're going to make a slander like that, the word you're looking for is W-A-C-K. She wrote W-H-A-C-K, which... that makes it a verb. Like when I worked at Cracked, someone did a video called Cracked is Whack, and they spelled it W-H-A-C-K. And I so badly wanted to just make a response video and be like, you idiot. It's a verb.
So whack, if it's with, I don't know this. I just thought it was really funny.
Whack is 80s rap slang.
Yeah, I know what whack means, but I didn't know if it was spelled differently. It's a verb or not a verb.
It is. It's W-A-C-K if you're using it in the way she's trying to use it.
And if it's W-H-A-C-K.
If you mean like, I'm going to whack you in the face.
That's also a verb, isn't it? Well, whacking?
W-A-C-K is not a verb.
Whack? I'm going to whack you.
W-A-C-K it means like something is bad. W-H-A-C-K means.
Oh, gotcha. So if something's whack, it's W-A and that's an adjective.
Correct.
Okay. And so this is a woman who won. Made fun of this town for being, or this place for being a white trash town. And her response, who uses the word whack as an adult human, too, spells it incorrectly.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. That's hilarious.
Also, what is with this interview with Michael at the end? Like, did he move to a fucking Bob Evans location?
I don't know. It looked like they were at the Freddie Gill's place because it was Freddie Gill's laptop. Or no, it was an interview with Freddie Gill, but they moved. He was in like the garage, right?
No, Michael's last interview, it looks like he's where they make Hidden Valley Ranch. Like everything's green and red and his sweater matches all the chairs in the background. It's fucking weird.
Is this where he's going to break the laptop?
Yes, because.
Okay. Because.
This is the big moment because Michael, he's talking about, he's all happy in this interview. And he's like, she's done all the damage to me that she can do. What else is she going to do? What's she going to do? And I'm like, she's going to do something. Something's going to happen. And at this point, one of the producers is like, so we got another allegation about you. And if we could just, you know, delve into that a little bit. And he's like, nope. Nope. I don't care. I don't want to hear anything she has to say. He is panicking. Like,
yeah,
he is clearly panicking. And his lawyer is there. And his lawyer is like, Michael, I think this is actually a good opportunity for you to address this allegation about you, which I had not heard yet. He was like, it's very kind of them to give us this information ahead of time. And Michael is like, All right. I'll watch it. I'm saying no to everything else after this, but I'll watch it. Give me the laptop. And when they give him the laptop, he's like, how many pieces? And the guy's like, what? And he's like, how many pieces do you want me to return this laptop in? He's like, because I'm going to break it after I watch this. And the producer's like, please don't.
Yeah, we'd prefer you not do that. We could hold the laptop while you watch it and give you something else to break if you'd like.
And here's the thing. They stop short. You don't hear the actual allegation, but right before this happens, Freddie Gill says or claims that Christine tried to set up a sexual encounter with him and Natalia, like almost in like a pimp sort of way, like a pr-
prostitution thing, which she's a child. That's obviously not the right word for it.
Yeah.
But Freddie Gill, to his credit, was like, I don't fuck little people. You kidding me? He's like, I fuck grown women. He's like, I of course I said no. And that was like,
he meant little. I think he meant a child. He was like, I don't fuck children. I don't think he meant little people.
I feel like he meant little people because he thought Natalia was in her 20s. Like, that's what Christine had told him. So, like, as far as he knew, Natalia wasn't a child.
Yeah.
But
the whole thing, it's just such a fight. Like, what?
So that comes out. So there's like some kind of sex trafficking allegations that come out at the end.
The very end. Yeah.
The very end. And then, so when they get ready to play this video, I was like, I know what this is going to be. Yeah. I know what it's going to be. And Freddie Gill on this video goes, well, Christine also told me that at one point Michael started and then it cuts. You kind of hear him form like an F word or something. Yeah. And then it cuts.
And it cuts.
And I was like, I knew it.
I kind of knew that around the time episode 3 was going on when he was changing and washing her.
Yeah. After a judge had declared that she was 22. Oh,
it makes me sick. Like it, and then that's it.
Yeah. Well, it seems like by the time this ended, Christine's trial hadn't finished because there's a very dramatic scene where Freddie Gill talks about like how he'll testify on someone's behalf. And he just goes, I'll see you in court. And then he turns off a light in his house and just rolls off into another room. And I was like, I hope the filmmakers just like hunkered down and spent the night like right where they were.
Wait until he came out in the morning.
In the morning, like, what the fuck?
You guys are still here? I thought
you have a hotel? No, we just have one more question, man.
Yeah, well, you left really dramatically. We had more. Well, have you looked into all of that?
Like her trial?
Yeah.
Well, they tell us at the end she was also pretty much acquitted.
Everything was dropped. And later this summer, they're doing a 2-hour Natalia side and actually interviewing.
Oh, no rush. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they have the family, the man's family has a TikTok now. Well, the first part of the TikTok is definitely what's the mom's name?
Christine?
No, not Christine, the one that Cecilia, the one who basically adopted.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. The first part of her TikTok is just her TikTok before any of this, which is basically her trying a bunch of filters and being silly. And then they adopted Natalia. And then there's a bunch of stuff about their family and like getting justice for Natalia. But it's kind of funny if you go to her TikTok because it's like just like a regular person living in Lafayette being like, this is a funny filter. And then now it has all these followers and it's about their family. But I'm like, didn't you think to go back and be like, maybe I ought to delete this? Or she like
delete a couple of these, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Because it's all of those. But so there apparently is going to be a documentary where it lets this woman now who is I think now she's 18 of age, right? Yeah, because of 2003 she was born.
Well, she would be like 20 now.
She's 20 now.
Born in 2003.
And it's obvious that she was a child then because you see her now and she's an adult. Like, it's like,
yeah.
Anyone who's at all suspicious that this kid was not a kid, look at interviews with her now and you're like, oh, this is.
Yeah, if she was like 20 when they got her, she is aging amazingly. Like, she's aging in reverse.
Aged 220 and then stopped aging. You know what I mean? Because she aged, but just to a 20-year-old.
So do you think they're going to ask that question?
I hope so.
Her version? Like,
I hope so. I hope that they're able
doing anything because it's the only thing you can infer from the way they unroll that because they
150%
don't actually say it. It's just you kind of know that that's.
And I wonder if they didn't say that because of, I think you said legal purposes. If something is being processed, if there are accusations being processed and they're like, we're not actually allowed to talk about this because allegations are being taken seriously. And maybe, and I don't know what the statute of limitation on that is, but I know, unfortunately, abuse like that is. But I think it's been enough less time that. But I wonder if the reason why they didn't say all of that, but inferred it is because of maybe there's actual allegations being brought forward and maybe Michael will go to jail for raping a child.
And then there's that moment at the end. You got to watch this all the way to the end. If you haven't watched it yet, people, yeah, and are planning to watch it, there's a moment at the end where they cut back to that 2019 interview with Michael. And he says something along the lines of, oh, you don't get the crying version, but if you need the crying version, I can do that too. Like, just straight up says, yeah, I can like cry on command, basically.
Sociopath. Like, he's a sociopath.
Like, he had just said that, so obviously you're going to project a little, but he really looked like a sociopath in that moment also.
Oh, yeah.
And here's the thing. If a court said Natalia was 22 and he took that as the green light to start having sex with Natalia, he is a sociopath.
That's like, still...
obviously. Like, that is horrifying. That's so horrifying. But who knows? I guess we'll find out. When is the follow-up coming out?
They said this summer, but it's kind of...
it's kind of summer already.
Like, it's pretty summer. Like, we got like a month left, but as of June, in mid-June, there was an article that said sometime this summer. There's an article in July that was like later this summer, and it's only going to be a 2-hour. Like, it's not going to be like a 6-episode, like, long thing. It's just going to be a 2-hour interview with Natalia. And there's also an interview with her. I think how this was discovered, or how, not this was discovered, this was a crime that was being, but Dr. Phil interviewed her. And I don't love Dr. Phil, don't think I do by saying that, but there was, but he interviewed her and he was like, how old are you? And she's like, well, legally I'm this age, but I'm really 17. And so there's, I never saw the full interview of Dr. Phil because he's like watching, you know,
I'm not
someone scratch
watch
a chalkboard. Yeah, I can't do that.
I'm not going to watch an episode of Dr. Phil. But yeah, I'll watch the follow-up documentary. I'm interested.
Would you like to watch it together?
Well, yeah, I think we have to cover it at this point.
Oh, yeah. No, but I mean, I'll drive down there and we'll just like eat some popcorn and maybe have a dance
party.
Yeah,
if you want to. That would be great. No one ever comes down here except Jeff. So
yeah, that sounds fun, kind of fun. We'll think about it.
We'll do it. We'll do it.
Yeah.
Until then, I think that is our episode.
Yeah.
Kim, thank you so much for doing
it. Thanks for having me. Thanks for...
do you think people should people watch this? I think they should. I think they...
Yeah.
It's
even though
long.
We give away a lot of it, but I think... and that's what we do. But like, I think it's... I think this story's important. I think this little girl's story... she's a little kid still. She's 18 and she lost her childhood, right? I think it's just important to tell the story and get as much people to hear about this. So at least if those two people don't go to prison for what they did, they won't be able to be in society anymore without people knowing they're monsters. You know what I mean? So I think people should watch it.
Yeah. If you haven't already, give it a watch. And Kim, do you have anything to plug before we get out of here?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's always weird to plug stuff.
Yeah. After an episode like this.
After it's like, God, I feel so icky and sad, and angry. But you know, the regular stuff. I'm Kim Kroll. Just follow me on Instagram. And I have some shows. I have some shows coming up in late August. So I'm putting those up on my calendar at kimkroll.com. I have a book and a podcast, Crawlspace, KRALSPACE. What about you, Adam?
Well, I would say follow the show on Instagram so you can, we try our best to say ahead of time what we're going to be watching. And sure, I'll post ahead of time that we're watching this 6-part documentary, but also I'm going to be posting that the day before this goes up. So I hope everyone has fun watching The Curious Case of Natalia Grace tonight.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long night. Actually, it's not. It goes, the episodes at least are short. They're like 40.
And it goes quickly. Like, you kind of like, you want to watch it. You want to be like, what? Because the first half, you think it's an orphan situation. Like the.
Yeah. It's too long, but just a little too long.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot going on that you'll see. Just watch
it. Just watch it. Just watch it. Yeah.
And follow us on Instagram. And I think that's it. Hey, Kim, let's get out of here. Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you.
Hot off the press from Maybelline, New York, it's new Lifter Plump, an intense plumping lip gloss formulated with chili pepper to deliver a heated sensation for an instant plumping effect that lasts. From 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Red Flag, Hot Honey, Cocoa Zing, and more. An extra large wand applicator transforms lips in one swipe. Learn more at Maybelline.com. For a limited time, get 10% off your Lifter Plump purchase on Amazon with code 10PLUMP.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.